Imagine some of our readers never heard of Simo.
Simo.
What you could tell us about you?
Well, we're a rock band from the southern United States. Very influenced by classic 60s and 70s bands, you know, Cream, Hendrix, Led Zeppelin. But we also like to jam, you know, in the spirit of free jazz, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, etc. So we try to blend the two, you know, with having a mix of shorter song, you know, 2-3-4 minute songs, and then also places to launch into improvisations and jams.
All right. If I try to talk to your spirit of synthesis, how would you summarize the band in three words, and why these three words? Or four or two?
I suppose it would be honesty and truth would be the two. You know, and what I mean by that is, you know, we record all live. All the takes on the record are takes. There's no edits. You know, the overdubs are few and far between, and they're pretty obvious. So that's, if I could sum it in a nutshell, that would be it.
But one way or the other, is that a reaction to the maybe overproduction of most of the release which are available on the market nowadays, or just your way?
It's just our way. Yeah, it's just our way. It's because of what we all love. It was done that way, you know. I mean, Hendrix was in there. They were getting takes. You know, it should be, a record should be a moment in time captured, in my opinion, you know.
And so you make sure you use vintage material. You don't Pro Tool everything and rebuild the puzzle.
No rebuilding, no editing, no taking something from for the first take and chopping it with the second take. It's, you know, we did a record to tape, and we did this last one was done in Pro Tools, but we just use the electronic recording like a tape machine, you know, just turn it on.
But one way or the other, does this allow you also to allow mistakes to be burned forever?
Yeah, it does. There aren't many, though. You know what I mean? Like, maybe if you listen really hard, there's one or two.
And that's the one you hear, because you know what you were
exactly
expecting. That much, 90% I will not even notice, because I don't know what was you expecting.
Exactly.
Purpose at the end.
Yeah.
But now you have the experience of a first record a few years ago, so can you still have fun listening to it, or you're just focused on what you should have done, or the bits and pieces which... Exactly.
You know, I still enjoy the first record, but I am my own worst critic, so I have a tendency of listening back and going like, oh, I wish I would have done that different, or, you know, I've done it better before, and, you know, but it's...
And also, if you try to think of one souvenir, one event, one something that would kind of capture the whole period for the recording of the first album, from the beginning to the recording, all the live, the gigs after that. Is there one event in particular you think will crystallize the area, the period of the first album?
No, I don't think there's one event. The band has been a metamorphosis, you know, and a learning and growing experience since day one, you know, I think.
And you think it's good, or...?
I think it's good.
Yeah, it's good?
Yeah.
All right. So now the new record is supposed to be released in a few end of January.
End of January. I think the 29th is the next date.
That's what we're doing on the commercial. So 2 months ahead of the release. What's your state of mind? What's your feeling regarding this new record? Now it's out of you. You released it to the public. But you will soon release it to the people.
Yeah.
Cannot do much about it anymore.
Correct.
So, but in retrospect, maybe I don't know how long ago it was recorded. What's your feeling about it?
I still like it. Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. Again, like I was saying earlier, being, you know, our own critics, there are things that, listening back, I definitely would like to be able to have another shot at. But I think it's really a good record overall, and. And I still like playing all the songs, which is cool.
One way or the other, most of the time we consider the second record is a kind of a milestone in a band's career.
I would say, yeah.
And so does it mean that you one way or the other, consciously or unconsciously, you felt some extra pressure to write and record?
Not extra pressure, no, I don't think so. It's just different this time, you know, because our original bass player is no longer with us, so it's just, again, the metamorphosis, it's just a new period, and I feel that, you know, this album marks the start of the new era and period of the band, you know.
So you mentioned it's Ila Shapiro, he entered the band.
Yeah.
Is the new element within the band, and the roots of the band, you were you three guys, so the former bass player, yourself, and Simo, getting together, wanting to work together. So how much this introduction of a new member modify one way or the chemistry within the band?
It certainly changed the chemistry a little bit, you know, but I think for the better. It feels more like a team now, and we still write as a team, but you know, people bring different energy and different vibes to, you know, their own personalities, to both their playing and just, you know, how they hang out, how we interact and everything. So yeah.
Okay, but one way or the other, is that the idea that you're kind of squeezing or sucking all the energy or the creativity from a guy, and then one of the three will have to leave for the next to bring new blood to the whole thing? Can you, in your way of doing music, so a lot of improvisation and so on, can you find new blood without changing members? You think long term?
Oh yeah,
it's a never ending source.
Yeah. I don't think you have to change members at all. You know what I mean? It's I'm trying to think of how to put this into the right words. That it, you know, it's about where we go as a team, you know what I mean? Like, we all have different ideas and we're all constantly trying to grow as individuals and musicians. And then that, I think, is what propels the band to new places, not just changing a person, you know.
But one way or the other is not your way of working or even the thing, your spirit of the music, be a huge machine of frustration, because, I mean, when you are three creative minds trying to work together, one way all the time you have to find the balance between you three. So you would like to go that way, you would like to go that way.
Oh yeah.
So the balance is somewhere.
Yeah, we don't always agree, you know. But there's three of us, so two votes beat out one vote. You know what I mean? So if we're working on something, and
Simon,
I think
it's democratic.
It's very democratic. Yeah, absolutely. We'll all bounce ideas off of each other and say, wait, that's a cool lick, or that's, you know, that's not as good, or how many times should we do this, you know. And if we butt heads and we don't agree, we vote on the ideas. And
so the song that on the record is only the one that have the agreement of the three members.
Yeah. I think the one that JD did acoustically is obviously all his own, and there's one other track on there called Please that he kind of just brought and said, this is a song that I have that I want to play it this way. But everything else started with one lick or one concept or one idea, and then we all bring our own ideas to it.
So that's the magic of the band. One of you guys come with an idea and you build around that?
Yes. I would say 90, you know, most of our stuff, 90%, I don't know how much percent, but you know, it evolves that way.
So how you organize? You say, okay, we meet, I don't know how many times, certain number of times during the week or once a week?
Yeah, we practice two or three times a week.
You record everything, and then after that you re-listen and you decide that's interesting,
yeah.
That's interesting. That,
yeah.
So you trash 90% of it or 95% of
no,
it?
No, we don't trash that much. It just, it depends. Usually what we'll do is when we start with that one riff or one idea, you know, we'll have the tape running, as it were, which in this case is Pro Tools, and then, you know, we'll play the ideas, go listen back, say, hey, this is working, that's not, well, let's try it this way. You know, it might just be as simple as like, hey, Adam, try it on the ride cymbal instead of the hi-hat, or hey, there's too many notes going on here, open up the riff a little bit, or, you know, whatever. So we play the ideas, we listen back, and kind of just keep that process going for the whole day, the whole week, several weeks, however long it takes to refine, you know, into the final product.
So did you build up gigabytes and gigabytes and
it's
gigabytes?
It's a lot.
But one way or the other, you at the end of the process, for example, at the end of this album, you decide, okay, everything that it was done is on the side, or you keep and you'll see if you can reuse later on, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, for example, there's a few things that we recorded for this record that we didn't end up using that will actually probably be on the next record, but we'll recut them, you know what I mean? Yeah.
We'll be reshuffled.
Right, exactly.
So you may have the roots of five coming records in your...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have so many songs that are tracked and in the computer, and, you know, we have a big list to choose from, but we also like writing new stuff too, so it's just kind of, when it comes time to do the next record, it will be kind of like, what's our strongest material, what do we all feel the best about? Some of them will be old, some that we've reignited, some of them will be totally new, you know.
But also, do you work when you build a track list for a record, do you build based on, I don't know, the mood you want to give into the record? Or
yeah.
This can be important?
Yeah, oh yeah.
This can be an element of choice?
Yeah, it's definitely an element of choice. And also, some, you know, will it fit on a vinyl? Because we are, of course, loving old rock and roll music. You know, we try and pace a record so that it will fit on an A side and a B side, which means there has to be a certain number of songs. You know, the time limits are different than a CD or obviously a digital download, you know.
Okay. I don't know you three guys how old you are, but I'm not sure you were born in the 60s.
No.
One way or the other, it's not weird to, even like me, I can listen Mozart, it was 2 centuries ago, right? Okay. So, but to dive so much in, you know, to root your music so much in the 60s and the 70s, where you, for maybe most of you did not even live the movement at that time, is that not a kind of a weird journey to the past?
For me, no. And part of the reason, I was born in the late 70s, and my dad always listened to music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So
it was his generation.
Yeah, it was his. Growing up, you know, that's all that I heard around the house, in the car, everything. So I had already kind of been exposed to that. And, you know, then when I started coming of age in the 80s and 90s and I was hearing what was coming out, I wasn't as inspired by it or as touched by it.
Nirvana, Soundgarden, whatever.
Oh, yeah, and no, and not that they're bad bands. I like swing. You know, I like grooves that I like Motown. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. It speaks to me more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so it made sense for you to follow that way. And
absolutely.
But on one way or the other, don't you have the feeling that everything was done at that time? And so what you're doing is recycling stuff that was done in the past. Can you, what, and I don't want to be, to say it's good or bad, but one way or the other, what's your added value in 2015?
Well, I think that, I mean, taking inspiration from that era is different than copying it directly,
sure.
You know, and so that's where we kind of come from, is that we're inspired from that era, not only the songs, but the instruments themselves, the sounds, you know, the way the recordings were done, all of that has influenced us, but I hope that we put our own spin on all of it, you know.
You don't have nightmares saying sometimes I may hear that some of our brand new song, one way or the other, even if we were no influence at all because we didn't know the track from a very old track in written 30 years ago.
Yeah, no,
I
really...
It makes sense. I do something. It's maybe a question from a non-musician. But for me, you have this all 20, 30 years, you get this really big cycle of the trend is to go back to the past, because the 50s, now the 60s, 70s, maybe in 20 years we'll say, why, because the music of the 90s. And so it's okay, kind of a race cycle one after the other, and at some point you say, but people might consider that everything was done at that period. For the psychedelic rock and everything, you have to go to, everything was done at that time. So is that not a never-ending and a hopeless trend to try to
not for us or me. No, we don't worry about it. We just play what comes from the heart, and you know, and that's just happens to be that okay. style. Yeah.
Okay. If I read well, you record at Macon.
Yeah,
Georgia.
The big
right?
house. Yes.
The big house. Obviously, you know the story. Why it was it's an important place for rock. Apart from the symbol, or the maybe the joy, the fun to work there. What did you want to catch from this the place, the spirit?
We wanted to catch a little bit of the spirit. You know what I mean. We also just wanted to get out of Nashville and do something fun. And I remember the first time we went, we played a show in Georgia, and we went in there just to check the place out, and kind of walked in and went, oh, this is a good sounding room. I bet drums would sound good in here, and you know what I mean? And then just one thing led to another, and we ended up going there to record.
And so how was that? What can you tell us? If you have any anecdotes?
It was great. I loved it. It was cool to know that that was where the Allman Brothers lived, and it was really exciting to get out of Nashville and get to, you know, a place where we weren't distracted by our normal daily lives. You know, it was just like, come in, record all day, have some dinner, go to the hotel, come in the next day, record all day. You know what I mean? So there was no like, oh, my girlfriend this, or my, you know, I don't have this to do, I have that to do.
You were 100%
very focused. Yeah, it was
and
just
so recording. How long did you take to record
it? We did it in 2 days.
with demoing a lot, or it was mostly?
Well, we had all the songs ready to go. Yeah. It was just a matter of getting in, setting up the mobile studio, setting up the instruments, getting the mics in the right places, and that took half a day. And then we spent the next 2 days tracking, and then left the next day.
All right. Yeah. Any other? Would you have any other symbolic places that you would like also to record on Abbey Road or whatever?
Oh, of course, yeah. Abbey Road, Chess Studios in Chicago, you know, the Muscle Shoals Studios. There are definitely, again, places from the era that we all love that would be really cool to go check out.
So that's the next ones on your to-do list?
Yeah, it would be cool. Yeah.
All right. Question for you, the drummer. One way or the other, in your experience as a drummer, do you think you need to share a special bond with the other guy of the rhythm section, which is a bass player, to work fine?
Absolutely. Yeah. The chemistry has to be there. You have to be in the same sync and kind of come from the same again. Come from the same school and the same love of music, you know, like stylistically, you know what I mean? Like, it's tough for me to play with a punk rock bassist who is just always playing like eighth note streams or something like that, where, you know, I enjoy something more syncopated from my bass player, you know.
Okay, so so you had both experience with the bass player, you share the common rock culture, or you don't share a common rock culture, and it's black and white. It's
absolutely, yeah.
Even if technically speaking, it's fine. It's you don't have the same feeling or
correct.
Pleasure or
yeah.
chemistry.
Yeah, or even something as you know. And again, this is kind of an obscure idea, but even somebody who maybe plays a little ahead of the beat or a little behind it, you know, for me makes a big difference in how I'm gonna end up playing. You know, or if I'm playing with a bassist who's really rock solid, that lets me stretch out as a drummer a little more and go some more interesting places. Whereas if I just have to be the metronome, and you know what I mean?
You just talking on the beat remind me of a question right now. Have you seen the movie Whiplash?
No, but everybody tells me I have to see it.
As a drummer, I would have loved to get your opinion as a drummer about the movie. If you have the opportunity,
well, yeah, you are like the 20 or 30th person who's told me about it, so I need to check it out.
It's more 50s rock. It's very different. No, not really your style, but just on the way your relationship with the instruments. That would have been interesting. Okay, right. Next time.
Yes.
The element which is very important for me, I don't know for you, it's the cover picture.
The what?
Cover picture.
Cover picture.
Which is there.
I love
very
it.
Also psychedelic. You have all the codes from the 16th for the psychedelic rock of the period. How in general do you work with the cover artist? And for this one in particular, what was your exchange or your relationship with the guy?
Well, I never even met him. Okay. Our manager gave him the concept, and then he delivered a black and white version of it to us, and we were all blown away. Like, when I opened the email,
black and white?
Yeah, without the color.
The key element is the
color pop.
Color.
So it started. We all got an email with the first version, the black and white version of it, and it just blew all of us away.
But basically, you sent him pictures of you.
There's pictures of us. Yeah, he got pictures of us, and then he did that. And then after we said yes, this is amazing, he threw several different colored versions at us, and we kind of voted on what our favorites were.
And you took the most bright.
There were a couple different ones, and I actually kind of was like, I like the blue one, and everybody was like, I don't know, I like the hair that's brown, and then he ended up actually the final one was. I think he sent us three or four, and the final one that is the cover was none of those four. He did a little extra tweaking, but I was just absolutely thrilled by the way it turned out.
And you also modified the logo of the band, but the way it was...
The font?
Yeah. I think it's a slight modification with the first one, no?
Yeah, it's a little different. If you've seen the first font, which is actually on the live EP, the green one. Yeah. And that's the one that's on my bass drum at home in America.
Right.
I don't even know how that one came about, but I think it's cool. So
you don't know if it was done with that. It was done by the same cover artist.
I'm sure it probably was. Yeah.
He offered the whole package.
Yeah, he did the whole thing. Yeah, brilliant. I think he's wonderful. I'm looking forward to the next one. I hope he does the same. Yeah,
sure. And one of the advantages that when you're in a music shop, I don't know if people go to the music shop anymore, is they just iTunes everything, but that's the kind of cover which will coat your eyes quickly, considering how bright the color are.
Yeah, I think so too.
So you're already in 5 years career? Yeah.
My career or
the band career?
The band, it'll be 5 years. Yeah, it'll be 5 years in January since JD and I first played our note together.
So, on your personal level, of the five years of the band, you share the stage with a lot of bands. So Deep Purple, you were part of the Blues Rock Titan, and so on. What did you learn from all? Being surrounded by or watching the shows of these guys, and
I was inspired by them, but I wouldn't say that I learned anything. But that's just I've been playing for almost 30 years, man. You know, it's like I take notes, I watch. Like when we played the Deep Purple show, I love Ian Pace's drumming, so of course I was watching him and paying attention. But I do that all the time.
But on technical level, you don't learn anything. The way they manage the thing, the way they play with the audience, the way they,
exactly.
The professional job.
Yeah, the showmanship or putting on the show. And really just how they, their backstage demeanor, who's cool and who's not cool and who's easy to work with and who's a pain in the ass and, I try and take the good qualities that I've in people and duplicate them, and if I see bad qualities, I try to not have them in my personality. Hopefully,
by reading a lot of stuff about the band, one way or the other, you have the feeling that Joe Bonamassa took you under his wing. Would you say that, or it's not the reality?
I don't know if take under their wing is the right term for it, but he definitely stepped up and helped us when he didn't need to at all. He got us hooked up with Mascot in the first place. He has said some very nice things about JD in national press at home. He got us doing his blues cruise last year, which we're doing again in 2016. Well, I guess it would be earlier this year, but then we're doing it again in February of 2016. So he's definitely been very generous and has helped us out a lot in the last 2 years or so, which has been really, really, really amazing. It's really cool. He didn't have to do any of that.
So two last questions before a short quiz. What's your view on the American rock scene from your point of view, from Nashville?
I think there's that a lot of the best bands and musicians out there aren't the ones that anybody hears about.
Underground?
The underground, yeah. I mean, some of my favorite bands are just friends of mine in Nashville. They're amazing players that just haven't gotten a break yet, you know. And what we're subjected to in America is the media frenzy, the, you know what I mean, the hype, the bands that I don't necessarily think, you know, are great musicians.
And so maybe you need a Joe Bonamassa to...
Yeah, exactly, yes.
To remove you from the underground and just catch you.
Yes, 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 exactly.
Because the American market for, I don't know, to get record deal are as difficult as it seems to be in Europe. There's no, because you know, with the internet you have the feeling that everybody's spreading its music easily everywhere. Maybe now you're submerged by so much release everywhere that you cannot pick the right one. You're lost in the sea.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Actually, you know, when you go to the internet or to, you know what I mean, wherever, there's so much now, you know, which I think can be a positive and a negative. You know what I mean? In one sense, you know, you can be an underground band and record your own music and put it out on the web, and now it's available for anybody in the world to hear and see, you know. But on the flip side of that, like you just said, now there's so much, it's like, who do you know to go to? You know, it's maybe a word of mouth thing, and then it leads you to them, or...
So if you had to give two or three advice to our listener, readers of two, three band they should get interest to, would you mention some?
I these would all be friends of mine from way back in the day. I would say Pat Sweeney is an amazing friend and an amazing musician and writer. I know him from Ohio years before I ever moved to Nashville. I love Pat. I think Stacey Collins is great. I think the London Souls are great. They're out of New York. I love their drummer. You know, and a couple of my other favorite Nashville bands have broken up recently, so they're, you know, can't, yeah.
Last question before the short quiz. What's your expectations and hopes for Simo in the coming months, years, weeks?
My hopes is that people will enjoy what we do and come to our shows, and we can have a nice career as a touring rock band. That's my hope, to make a living doing this and have people enjoy what we do.
All right, just a short quiz, just to by a very short question to try to let you know a little better. I know it's difficult, but I try. Favorite song ever?
Favorite song ever.
I can go to favorite album ever.
Yeah, favorite song ever is probably Good Times, Bad Times, Led Zeppelin.
Okay, good. The spark or the thing that makes you take the drumstick and transform maybe the life of your parents as a nightmare or drawing a drumming boy?
The spark?
Yeah, the spark, the event, the song, something that make you want to grab a...
Actually, I didn't want to play music. My parents made me join the school band at 10 years old, and so I picked the drums just to annoy them. And then happen to love it and be
them.
Really good at it. I swear, I didn't even want to play. Yeah.
You see how destiny can be...
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah, I just happened to absolutely love it and get it, you know.
And you loved it quickly? Or
very quickly, yeah.
It was not 6 months of hell and after that you...
No, I mean, right away I loved it and I got it and I understood rhythm and...
And your parents were stuck. I mean, the one way they...
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You could not say, no, you stopped no more.
Exactly, no. I was like, they created this monster.
first rock album you bought yourself. No, not offered by someone. Just
myself. One. Exit yeah. Stage Left by Rush.
All right, and the last one?
The last one that I bought?
Yeah.
Recently. Wow.
Can be iTunes or it can be the one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Remember what the most recent record I've actually...
One of the most
recent. What was. It would probably... Probably have been Jeff Beck Truth, I think. I've had that for a long time and borrowed it from friends, but I needed to own it, so I think I downloaded that one off of iTunes within the last couple of years.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
My pleasure.